Hello, it's Ari Rosenbaum here with another episode of that 401k podcast. This week's edition, we're going to talk about 401k plan sponsors and how they need to avoid being a mark. Of course, first things first, that 401k virtual conference 3, the search for SPAC, is going to be held on Friday, June the 5th. Go to LinkedIn, go to Twitter, see the link for the Zoom conference. Got some new presentations that are going to be added, new presenters. I'll certainly do a new presentation. We can only talk about the CARES Act, so much. We'll, change it up a little bit as far as my presentation. But hopefully you can join us. The second one was really great. We had over 200 people sign up and well over 100 people attend. People had, very good feedback on the event, and I know most enjoyed it. So as far as the other events, of course, we, we're in flux. As I speak right now, Major League Baseball hasn't decided what they're going to do. They're still talking to the union about whether they're going to resume the season or not. So I'll let you know in terms of what events are going to be held in 2020. We'll see what happens. As with anything, changes, the story kind of changes. You get three doctors and you get five medical opinions about coronavirus. But it is what it is. So again, this week's episode, we're going to talk about 401k plan sponsors and why they need to avoid being a mark. I'm a big fan of the Ocean's 11 movies, Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. I think 11 and 13 were superior to 12, but I'm talking about the remakes. I'm not talking about the original. I did see the original Frank Sinatra, Rat Pack. It was a decent movie. It was a little basic in terms of stealing and knocking off casinos. So I did enjoy the George Clooney, Brad Pitt version a lot better. But any type of confidence trick or a con, the victim is a mark. It's the dupe for the scam. And the problem with being a dupe is you're not smart. And unfortunately, we have a lot of plan sponsors out there who are marks. Who are marks for plan providers and don't do their job, who are just marks in the sense that they don't take their responsibility as a plan fiduciary seriously. And that's important. From the standpoint that plan sponsors are really unaware of the troubles that they get involved with, talking about it and having plan sponsors put in methods to avoid that would obviously cut into my business. But unfortunately, most plan sponsors that you talk to don't really care or have this false sense of security, which we'll talk about. And, of course, the biggest part of it is, plan sponsors really don't understand the responsibility that comes with being a plan sponsor. The two hats, as I always say, plan sponsor wears two hats. They're a plan sponsor and a plan fiduciary. As I always say, being a fiduciary requires the highest duty of care and equity and law. That's true. You have to be more responsible when you're holding somebody else's money than you are in your own money. You lose money, you screw up, that's on you. When I sold a Pete Alonso blue rookie card and I sold it for $40 about 3 years ago, that's on me. Now I probably could have sold that card for $3,000. That's my mistake. But when I'm responsible for other people's money, I have to be more careful. So plan sponsors really don't understand their role as a plan fiduciary. They don't understand the great care they have to take from it. A plan sponsor, that really ignores their fiduciary duty or ignores the fact that they are fiduciaries, reminds me of Sergeant Schultz from Hogan's Heroes. And Hogan's Heroes, for a lot of people who don't know, because they're probably my age, and I actually watched Hogan's Heroes and reruns, but Hogan's Heroes was a fascinating show that you couldn't make today. A comedy set in a World War II Nazi-run prisoner war camp probably wouldn't get a lot of laughs these days, but it was a great show. And, of course, the funny part of the show was the Nazis were played by Jews. John Banner and Werner Klemperer were Jewish. There was another general Nazi who was also, I forget who it is, and Robert Clary, who was in the show, was actually a Holocaust survivor. So, anyway, Sergeant Schultz is probably the most well-loved character. And he always said, "I know nothing, I hear nothing, I see nothing." You know, he was the sergeant in charge of the camp, working in the camp under Colonel Klink. And, when Colonel Hogan would have a scam going on or, something was going on, Sergeant Schultz would always say he didn't know nothing, he didn't see nothing, he didn't hear nothing. I think at one point I did have boxer shorts that had that when they were doing Hogan's Heroes t-shirts and boxer shorts about 15, 20 years ago. But anyway, plane sponsor can't afford to be like Sergeant Schultz. They also can't be Colonel Klink. They have to be responsible. I wouldn't say they have to be like Hogan, but they obviously have to be responsible in what they do as a plant sponsor and a plant fiduciary. And of course, one thing that, plant sponsors a lot don't do and they should do is keep copies of everything. When there is an IRS or DOL audit, you got to make sure that you have all the plant documents out there, all the records. It's a pain in the rear end as an ERISA attorney when dealing with any type of compliance issue and the government's involved and you can't provide the information because the client doesn't have it. DOL audits, they can be really, really painful, and they are when you have late deferrals and multiple payrolls. I've had two DOL audits dealing with late deferrals, and both took a year apiece. And the reason why was because, actually, one was an IRS audit, one was a DOL audit. And the funny part, the similarity was both clients were restaurant groups, very well-known restaurant groups with multiple restaurants around the country. But what really made it impossible to deal with was there were multiple payroll providers. So you had like multiple missing payrolls from different locations, one in Las Vegas, one in New York, one in Chicago, ADP's there, Paychex is there, and Valiant is another payroll provider that you're dealing with, and it became a headache. And it was a problem when the plan sponsor didn't have, all the payrolls and all the checks that went to the late deferrals, and it was really painful. And I had to work on it for quite some time. One of the few places where I charged by the billable hour, but it's really difficult when dealing with a client that doesn't have everything. And missing plain documents, that's a big problem. A lot of plant sponsors don't understand that they have to keep records of everything. And if they don't keep records of all the plant documents, the IRS has this assumption that if you don't have it, you didn't do it. So maybe you put in a PPA amendment or an extra amendment or a GUST amendment. These are acronyms for restatements that we had to do over the last 20-some-odd years. And if you don't, plant sponsor doesn't have a copy of it, IRS says, well, if you don't have a copy of it, that means you didn't do it, as far as we're concerned. And that's a problem. A lot of plan records can be tossed after 7 years. Plan sponsor just can't toss any plan documents away. I remember one time working for a union law firm, and, I had to work on the plan document from 1976 to see what happened. And it was a union plan, and what's got screwed up over a 30-year period. Something was missing in the plan documents when they went from one document to another. So it's important that plan sponsors keep everything. In my opinion, 7 years for a lot of stuff in terms of payroll and whatnot. Some forms of payroll, you probably could chuck it out 3 or 4 years. But, there's some things that I just wouldn't throw out. Valuation reports. In this day and age, when everything you can, certainly scan and keep on file on the computer, Less reason I want to throw it out. In the sense that, yeah, I'll throw out the paper copies, but I'll keep the computer copies. Just, I always worry, you know, having worked on union clients, the guy who terminated 20 years ago was paid out, and then all of a sudden says, "Oh, I didn't get my payment. I didn't get my benefit." Or somebody who terminated and was, you know, not fully vested or lost everything because they weren't vested at all. You know, I just don't need the headache of them going to the Department of Labor and trying to say that, you know, my client did provide the benefit. So that's why I always recommend that. Yeah, you know, it's usually a 7-year period for a lot of these records, not including plain documents, but, you know, if you could keep them and scan them, it's probably better to do that than just chuck everything. Just my 2 cents. And, of course, a great way for a plan sponsor to avoid being a mark is obviously using the TPA. You know, there are many reasons why a retirement plan is audited, and, you know, most of the time, the randomness, it's random. You know, sometimes it's related to questions that are answered on 5500, but sometimes it's random. And, unfortunately, the plan audit by the IRS or the DOL is when we discover some errors that the current TPA has made. We also discover these errors when there's a change of TPA. So one way to avoid that kind of headache, whether it's, you know, surprise, I hate surprises. I always say that. I have 2 kids, went for the ultrasound, needed to know what they are. I hate surprises. So I hate surprises when it comes to TPA errors. And the way the plan sponsor could avoid that is obviously hire a good TPA. Good TPAs make mistakes, but they make a lot less mistakes than bad ones. And I think that that's really, really important. You hire a good TPA, you avoid a lot of problems. And, you know, plan sponsor needs to realize that, you know, hiring a TPA, while the TPA can be negligent, ultimately it's the plan sponsor that needs to fix it up. You know, when I had a client who had a payroll provider TPA, and they improperly did the top heavy test, who do you think owed the top heavy minimum for these plans? you know, when I had another client who was using one of the fund companies, and they treated the plan as if it was a safe harbor plan, except there were no safe harbor contributions, and we had to rerun the tests. Who's going to have to pay for those tests? It's the plan sponsor. Thankfully, nothing had to be fixed in terms of the ADP or ACP test. But the fact of the matter is that the plan sponsor is on the hook for liability. And even if the TPA is a 316 administrator too, because ultimately the plan sponsor could be liable for negligent hiring, breach of fiduciary duty for picking a bad 316 administrator if anything really goes south. Obviously, liability concerns, the 316 is supposed to be on the hook and fix those errors. You know, my favorite story about a 316 administrator and fixing errors is I wrote the story. To me, to this day, you know, one of my favorite words is chutzpah. And chutzpah is Yiddish for nerve or, you know, gall. Perfect example of the definition of chutzpah is the person who kills his parents and then begs mercy on the court because he's an orphan. That's chutzpah. And the best part of 316 chutzpah of all time, 316 administrator was told to fix an error, but this was the best error that I ever heard of. There was a TPA involved in this plan that was being administered by 316 administrator, and the TPA screwed up and unfortunately paid 4 times as much to the 338 fiduciary. So instead of paying a quarterly fee every quarter, they paid an annual fee. The 316 administrator at one point accidentally got the 338's payment as well and held it in abeyance until they returned it to the TPA. But anyway, the 338 fiduciary, the advisor, switched firms. And so he complained that his old firm was overpaid, and he felt that it was necessary for the 316 administrator to pay for the error, to fix the error. Representing the 316 administrator, I said, I had a good laugh because I said, you know, under no circumstances is 316 administrator going to fix this problem. The easiest solution is obviously for the 338 fiduciary to return the excess payment that they received. And the 338 fiduciary won't stop. The 338 fiduciary actually had the client, the plan sponsor, contact the 316 administrator and say the same thing. We expect this 316 administrator to fix this error and pay for the excess paid to the 338. So I wrote back to the plan sponsor and I said, you know, the fact of the matter is that the 338 fiduciary was contracted for a certain price per quarter, certain fee per quarter. Paying in excess is a violation of that contract. It's a breach of the fiduciary duty of the 338 fiduciary to accept an excess payment. It is a breach of fiduciary duty for the plan sponsor to be aware of this excess payment and letting the 338 fiduciary pocket the fee. Now, the reason why this happened was because, again, the advisor on the plan moved firms, and then, you know, his new firm, his old firm got the excess payment, and he already got money. He obviously had gotten money off of that excess payment and didn't want to return it. So I basically said, you know what? If you guys are not going to return the payment, saying it to the 338 fiduciary, the new one and the old one, if you guys can't come to an agreement as to what to do, we're going to take this plan to the Department of Labor and let the Department of Labor figure it all out. And I want to say within... I gave them, I think I sent the email on Monday. I said, by Friday, you guys have figured it out. By Wednesday, everybody was in agreement that the advisor and the old 338 fiduciary firm would return the money. So it proved to me, again, that advisor had pocketed the fee, whatever his agreement is with his old firm, and he didn't want to return the money. And so I digress, but that's one of my favorite stories because that was such chutzpah that the 338 fiduciary, the financial advisor, and the old 338 fiduciary firm wanted the 316 administrator to pick up that extra payment that the 338 pay for that extra payment the 338 received. I mean, I understand a 316 being responsible to fix like an ADP error that they didn't catch or whatever it is. But the idea that the 338 fiduciary and the advisor would actually expect that they could pocket that extra fee. I mean, I laugh about it now because I mean, it's ridiculous that any plan provider that's a fiduciary would expect to pocket and keep a fee that was in excess of their contracted amount. But it is what it is. I just laugh about it. So, you know, again, a 316 administrator is responsible for a lot of things they're on the hook for. They are not on the hook for the fact if other plan providers receive extra fees, in my opinion. So, of course, another way for a plan sponsor to avoid being a mark is to have an advisor show up and do their job. You know, less frequent today than it was like 10, 15 years ago. 10, 15 years ago, you would actually have advisors. A lot of plans have advisors where they, you know, the plans never saw their advisor. I talk about years ago, I was recommended. Actually, it was a client. It was a doctor group in Pennsylvania reached out to me. I think they were eye doctors. And they wanted me to review the plan. And they said, well, this advisor, I think he's related to somebody, said, and it was a broker. He was being paid 60 basis points on a $14 million plan, and he was never showing up. And then I asked for the client for any type of, you know, IPS or plan education materials, and there wasn't any. Lo and behold, the client wised up and fired this broker and hired a 338 fiduciary for, you know, less than half the cost. So it's important that, you know, a plan sponsor obviously has a financial advisor that they can trust. They can actually see and shows up every now and then to take control of the fiduciary process or assist, whatever their role is, whether it's 321, 338, or in a non-fiduciary setting for those who are still brokers. you know, it's important that they have an advisor who, you know, provides investment education to plan participants, does review the funds, constantly, looking at the IPS, as well as, what an advisor also does, which is serve as the ombudsman for the plan. If there are any problems, the plan sponsor often relies on the financial advisor to cure some of the defects in the plan through the TPA or the ERISA attorney or the auditor or whatever it may be. Obviously, one way for a plan sponsor to avoid being a mark is having the necessary fiduciary liability insurance and the mandatory ERISA bond. I've dealt with situations where, plan sponsors have been sued. And fiduciary liability insurance goes a long way to protecting plan fiduciaries, plan sponsor from, the costs of defending any type of litigation. ERISA bond obviously is mandatory as set forth for any ERISA plan. I've had a situation where I had a client who did have an ERISA bond in place. They put in all their money with a financial advisor by the name of Bernie Madoff, and let's just say that it got a little sticky when the money went poof, and at the same time, the Department of Labor was auditing the plan. And last but not least, a way for the plan sponsor to avoid being marked is obviously reviewing the plan annually, looking into what the plan providers do. TPA, you want to make sure the TPA is up to snuff. You want to make sure the advisor is doing their job. And then, of course, reviewing fees. And the only way to review fees is obviously by benchmarking them against what the, outside providers, the other providers out in the marketplace charge for similar services. But also, you could do that through a benchmarking service or the 401k averages book, whatever it may be. And it's important that a plan sponsor do that because it's their fiduciary duty to pay only pay reasonable plan expenses. So these are ways that plan sponsors could avoid, being a mark. I don't think these TPAs, a bad TPAs, is running a scam, but, the idea is obviously you don't want to be a mark and get yourself in trouble. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode, as I did in retelling that story about the 338 fiduciary, the financial advisor switched firms and, pocketed some extra money and didn't want to turn it back to the plan sponsor. It's always a favorite story of mine. Anyway, hope you guys check out that 401ksite.com for further information and tune back next week as we talk another scintillating subject on that 401k podcast. Ari Rosenbaum saying so long.